You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecenio, represented by CLNS Media. Today on the show, Coles Wicker is back. We're going to break down a bunch of just random stuff that we've seen throughout the course of Feast Week, throughout the course of the early part of the college basketball season. We talked the Maui Invitational. We talked Duke's loss earlier this week on the previous podcast because those were kind of the bigger topics. But this one's going to be more of a grab bag, maybe is the way to put it. Right, Cole?
Yeah, a little bit mix and match. Going to go around all the prospects and kind of just throw out names and some observations that we've seen. We, of course, did the stock down, I believe, or some iteration of that in the last podcast. So it's more of like an update of what we've seen.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't think it'll be quite that structured. I'll probably just like ask you at points, hey, who do you want to talk about? But let's start with a couple of guys. So like, maybe it's worth just noting James Wiseman's appeal got denied. I don't know if we have spoken since Wiseman was suspended for 12 games earlier this month, I guess. Like, what, it was probably 10 days ago. So how do we think this affects things? Like, I feel like it basically doesn't. He's going to miss, unfortunately, the big Georgia showdown against Anthony Edwards that I'm certain that NBA scouts were basically already booked into, and now we'll have to change their travel plans. Maybe not, because Memphis still has a bunch of prospects. But other than that, like, I feel like this doesn't really affect much. And given that we're going to see James Wiseman again this year, it's just going to be a situation where Wiseman needs to do his needs to take care of his business against AAC competition.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, with how ridiculous the NCAA can be, I'm just kind of thankful that we get to see Wiseman at all anymore. Like, honestly, I didn't really know what to expect. So you could say the rest of the season, that wouldn't have surprised me. I'm very glad with this result. I think he comes back January 12th. Of course, we missed the Georgia game. That's going to be in battles at the rim would have been really informative and also fun to watch. He misses the Tennessee game as well, I believe. So that is not great, but I with the NCAA and some of these rules, like, I'm just going to take what I can get back January 12th or whatever it is. I think, at least for us, we get to see more of a sample in college, and I'm not going to, you know, dismiss that. That's valuable to me.
No, it's very valuable. It's going to be very valuable to scouts. You know, Wiseman's a guy that has been, I don't want to say hit or miss. Like, he had the big game against South Carolina State to start the year. He was a bit less so, as we broke down when they played Oregon. Right. So I'll be very interested to see what he looks like whenever he comes back and if he can provide the kind of value that I think he's capable of, especially on the defensive end. And, you know, Cole has been very forthright, you know, throughout this process that he's a bit worried about the polish. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and deny it. Like, I'm a little bit worried about the polish as well. But, you know, we'll see what he looks like. I'm excited for this.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm keeping an open mind. I just want to see more, honestly. Like, he's played a little bit better this year than I thought he would defensively based on his high school tape. So the more he shows, the more convincing that is, the higher I'll be on him. And I think the more certainty NBA scouts will have as well. So it's a win for pretty much everybody.
So Tyrese Haliburton dropped 25 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists against Michigan. I don't know what to do with this. Like, I don't really know what to do with Haliburton this year in general. The assist numbers are off the charts crazy. I know that analytics models are huge fans of Halliburton, and rightfully so. He is an incredibly intelligent player. He's a great defender, not just a good one. He is a great team defender. And with size at 6'5", as he continues to bulk up, he's going to be able to guard at an extremely high level on ball against lead guards, I think. So I am still at a point where I have him around the 20 area, because it almost, I worry about the functionality of his handle. I worry about the jump shot. Like, I've been very clear throughout the process that the jump shot is just not there for me yet. He's shooting 29.6, something like that, from three right now. Still not a guy that has been exceptional as a free throw shooter throughout basically any course of his career. Incredible decision maker and a guy that fills in interestingly as a rotation player, but like, there are people that are going to have him in the top 10. Like, there are going to be a lot of people, I think, that have him in the top 10, and I can't quite get there with him.
Yeah, I'm definitely not there, at least yet. I haven't watched him since, I think, the Oregon State game, which he actually showed some interesting flashes. Like, that's probably the cleanest pull-up that I've ever seen from him. I think it was on, like, elbow.
Yep.
But it wasn't like highly contested or anything. Like, he still struggles to get his shot off when he's really pressured on the ball, and that's what I'm kind of worried about is more how a team utilizes him at the next level. If they play him as a ball handler in the half court, I don't think he's going to be able to do a lot in those settings as far as creating his own offense. If you play him to pass and he makes the pass, like, that's bad defense. Like, you want him to be a scorer in the half court. I want him more off the ball. And why I was kind of intrigued with him there is I feel like he's extended his range, at least in that Oregon State game. Like, he took three or four threes that were just beyond NBA three, and that's how you can combat the slower mechanics, because he doesn't have the fastest release. He needs his feet set. It's a very deliberate shot, but if you can push that to greater distance and you can spot up from there, I think that's where he can make up some ground if he can actually be accurate. Now, that's a huge question mark.
Yeah, I was going to say.
at least the infrastructure, I can buy that thought process. I'm not sure about the results yet. So that's kind of the thing with him. Like, he's still not getting to the rim at a high rate. We know he can pass. Like, this is stuff, like, he can pass in that. In open court, he's a great hit head passer. He can make pick and roll reads. George Condit, is that right? Like, as a play finisher, has been very good for them this year in that capacity. So he has some options. I do think that a lot of his passes, like, so at least some of them, his teammates don't finish. Even his assist numbers, like, do reflect his passing ability. Yeah. They don't reflect necessarily his self-gravity ability as a scorer and, like, being able to create these passing lanes. But as a decision maker, this guy, we know. I mean, he's a high-level thinker. He's one of the smartest players in college basketball. It's just where do you buy him at the next level, and what role do you buy him at? But in this class, like, he has skills that will get him on the NBA floor if he can make a catch and shoot three.
Well, you basically have to play him in the role that Lonzo Ball is playing in New Orleans right now, right? Like, you have to play him next to a Drew Holiday style lead guard, right? Like, a guy who can play both on and off ball. Halliburton is very similar to Lonzo Ball in a lot of ways. I just think he's a little bit less athletic, which will create issues.
Yeah, no, that was when we talked last year in the podcast, that was my initial thought, was like, this is kind of like a poor man's Lonzo in several respects. Like, I just think that's the kind of player, and you have to utilize him that way. Like, he's not going to do much damage inside the arc. He's like a ball. He's like a chain linker. Like, he makes quick decisions. Like, if he's swinging the ball, he'll make a quick read and he'll, like, pressure the defense. That's what Lonzo's so good at. When he gets the ball in an advantage situation, he makes the defense pay. If it's like a 4-on-3 and you kick it to Lonzo, he'll take advantage of that mismatch and that rotating defense. That's how I kind of see Halliburton, as more of like a tertiary ball handler. I'm just kind of worried that a team will view him more as a guard, because I think that's the biggest problem with some teams, is like, anybody who's a guard is going to be on the ball, and a lot of these guys just aren't good enough in those situations. They have to be viewed purely as more like situational off-ball players in the half court.
Yep, totally agree with all of that. Think that's about all I've got. Like, again, like, it's not that I'm low. Like, I have him around like the 20 range right now, which is actually a little bit higher than where I had him coming into the year. He's helped himself. I do just worry about like the ball skills and what the role is. So Isaac Okoro is the next guy I want to bring up, because we've talked a lot about Okoro on this podcast. I'm gonna have Okoro in my lottery to start my big board. whenever my big board goes live. I haven't quite figured that out yet. He is playing for an Auburn team right now that I think is one of the 10 best teams in the country. He is playing a role for that team, but he's doing it really well. He's one of the best defenders in college basketball already, and you called that from the jump. He is still not a shooter, but he is efficient in terms of the way he makes decisions. He's efficient in terms of the way that he reverses the ball and plays within a role, and his athleticism allows him to wreak havoc across the floor. Ultimately, like, his ability is going to be dependent on where he gets to as a jump shooter. Like, he is just going to have to figure out how to shoot the ball at some point. But, he's just a guy that helps you win games, I think, at the end of the day.
100%. The jump shot is going to be the huge, you know, swing skill, if you will. I do think some of the touch he's shown on dribble drives is positive. Like, that's where I'd point to and say, like, this guy has some touch to work with. But I think the mechanics, he has to iron out his lower body and his upper body. If you saw him shoot at the beginning of the year, he had this corner three, I think, in the first game where it was like a 10-toes shot, which means, like, you're basically facing the rim. And a lot of coaches teach that at lower levels. Traditionally, problem with that is you can't align your elbow. That's why you see a lot of shooters now, we talked about this in the past, but like, tilt your feet, get your elbow more aligned. He's done that a little bit more recently. He's tilted his feet, but he's still not getting that elbow in. And that's what I want to see from him. He actually has this kind of like Mo Bamba summer league shot from Mo Bamba's rookie year where he'll jump to the left now. So I want to see him more on balance on those shots. There's just a lot to work on with his jump shot. Like, it's not there yet. He's, again, you got to align his elbow, get him some consistency in his mechanics and his release. That's going to be a process. And that's probably why he's not going to be as high on NBA boards as he is mine, because his shooting inputs thus far have not been overly promising. But there's just so much else there. I mean, there's so much fallback on his defense. You know, he's a great on-ball defender. He's a great off-ball defender. I've loved his passing this year. Like, I loved his drive and kick vision for a wing. Like, he makes pretty good decisions. He's incredibly unselfish. Like, that's why I think he's been so efficient in the half court finishing, is because, like, he hits gaps when he needs to extend and finish, but he also kicks the ball out when it's not there. And that's something that a lot of younger wings don't have, is the ability to make the right decision, get to your spots, make the right play. And he's doing that consistently.
Yeah, this is like supercharged Chuma Okeke for them. Like, he's just more athletic. He is a better on-ball defender. Chuma was good off-ball, but I think Okoro is really good off-ball. He's maybe not quite as good as Chuma, but he's really good. The shooting is obviously not quite there, but, like, look, Chuma isn't a guy that, like, teams sold out on as a shooter. And Okoro, I think, is a better ball handler and better passer. Like, his addition directly into that Okeke role is why Auburn is still so good and is still one of, you know, and again, in my opinion, I think they're one of the 10 best teams in the country.
Yeah, they have more modern personnel on that team, which I like. And he's kind of like the straw that stirs the drink as a passer sometimes. Like, a lot of those guys do force up shots and are not the most unselfish guys as far as making the extra pass. And that's why I think he's added so much to that, is he's the guy that will kind of – he'll break down the defense at times, whether that's on a cut or like a closeout drive. He'll collapse the defense, and he actually will kick it out and get these higher percentage catch-and-shoot looks. So it was a great fit. It was a great choice by him to go to Auburn, and hopefully Bruce Pearl can really work on his shot development. That's, again, what everybody was looking at coming into the season, was how much can this guy improve his perimeter skills? I think what you touched on, his handle, not as far as like isolation, but as far as being good enough and control enough to beat guys in space, has been good enough for a wing that's not like an on-ball creator type. Like, he's going to be more of – the NBA will view him more as like a very tertiary ball handler, like a straight wing.
Yep.
And I think that's going to help him as far as stationary catch and shoots. Can he play in like a motion system like Utah as far as movement shooting? No. But what I like about him is you can run him off a curl. He can get downhill. He can finish, and he can make a play, which I think you really need to do as like a modern wing. And one last point on him is like the weak side rim protection for wings, I think, is really important. That team defense, being able to help from the weak side. And he's one of the wings in this class that I trust with the most there.
Let's move on to Arizona real quick. There might be no one more fun than Nico Mannion in college basketball. Like, Anthony Edwards, like, exploding for a half is great, but like, Nico Mannion is just consistently an incredibly fun player to watch.
Yes, I mean, his ability to rise quickly with his pull up. I mean, his shooting is definitely fun to watch, and the passing is there too. He's very skilled. I think I'm a little lower on his ball handling ability than some seem to be. And I will note, just to throw the negative out here right from the off, he's gotten to the rim in the half court 3 times. Like, he's really relying on perimeter game and floater touch. He's got good, actually, pop off of 1 foot. Everybody saw the dunk at the end of that one game. But, like, to get to his floater, he actually explodes well off his left foot, which I like because he can kind of get that up over the top. I want to see him get to the rim a little bit more. I want to see his handle. I want to see him more in isolation at times. He has not played in that kind of role thus far, but he's been very good as far as making decisions, making reads, and shooting the ball in the role and kind of the play types that he's been given thus far.
Yeah, the bummer is that I was really excited about seeing him potentially play like really good teams, right? Like, I thought that Providence was really good coming into this year. I thought that Charleston, obviously had a chance to be solid. I was hoping they would be on the same side of Arizona's bracket, if not just like flat out play them in the first round. You know, UCF is not quite as good as what they were. Penn, honestly, like, it is maybe their biggest challenge in this tournament right now. So I'm bummed that we might not get a chance to see Arizona here in the Wooden Legacy event take on like a real, genuine contender. Because I think that, you know, this is a team that I still am. The prospects, I guess, maybe more so than the team, like, I'm a little bit questioning of, maybe. Like, we're going to get to see them play at Baylor. We're going to get to see them play Gonzaga before they get into the Pac-12, and the Pac-12 is much better. But, like, before making, like, grand pronouncements about Zeke Nagy being, like, a first-round pick and, you know, Josh Green, you know, being who he is, right? Like, I want to see them play a really talented group.
No, I'm 100% with that. I want to see guys like Nico as well go against better athletes and see how they create space, how you can get to the rim. Because, again, 3 times in, what, 6 or 7 games? In comparison, I think Maxie's at like 18. And you should be able, even though I think that Nico is getting a lot of hard hedges when he's playing these teams, like, he has to make a read. They're taking the ball out of his hands at times. Like, you should still be able to get to spots against lower level competition at a high level. And I'm just a little bit scared that people are going to make the trade comparison just because you want him to be this ultra skilled point guard. He's just not that good. I'm sorry. Like, you watch Trey against like North Texas in the second game of his college career, and you're like, holy shit. And like, I haven't gotten that feeling from Nico. Like, the handling difference is just, is very different. The pull-up ability, I will say, like, Nico's ability to rise quickly and, like, get to his shot is very impressive to me. Like, he's shown that ability thus far consistently. Like, his deceleration, he had one move. I get all the games mixed up. I've watched them all. But he had one move where he just kind of slammed on the brakes and, like, completely took this guy out. Like, the deceleration just rose right into a pull-up three that was, like, that's very translatable to me in early offense, for example. And that's a hard shot to really get down, having that balance. So he's done a lot of impressive things. It's just, you got to kind of wait for the hyperbole to cease a little bit, especially with Zeke, too. Like you noted, the true shooting has been incredible. That's not really how I evaluate prospects, is looking just at efficiency. You have to give a lot more context to that. How is he getting his baskets? You know what I mean? What's the competition level? And I think he still has some questions to answer there.
Yeah, totally agree. And like, even more than that, again, you know, we mentioned it on the last podcast, like, Zeke has not been good defensively this year around the basket. Like, I want to see him go up against someone like Tristan Clark for Baylor, who will put his ass in the basket because he is like stronger than Zeke Nagy appears to be, at least. I want to see him against guys like Filip Petrushev. And like, honestly, like, you know, you and I are not huge fans of Nafali Dante, but like, Nafali Dante is huge and could pose problems for Zeke. Like, I'm intrigued by those matchups as much as I am intrigued by anything we've seen from Arizona so far. Just because, like, look, like, Kofi Coburn, like, he's just not, that's not my kind of guy, I guess.
Yeah, I'll say my final note on Zeke is I did notice more reactivity defensively as a team defender in one of his last 2 games. Again, I can't remember which one it was against, which team, but he was actually like showing some good ability to quickly diagnose the play and get to the ball. Like, he wasn't altering the shot, which is what you have to do. Like, it's not just about being in the right positions, it's about being able to alter the play. And I didn't see that from him, but it was at least good to see more like team defense acuity. And my last question for you is, like, where are you at on Josh Green? Because the opinions are kind of a little bit all over the board with him.
My own opinion on Josh Green is schizophrenic. Like, I mean, It's going to be hard for him if he doesn't shoot it. He's shooting 25% from three right now. He's doing a good job of distributing, I think, and making good decisions and not trying to do too much. He's really good out in transition. He's been really good defensively, I think, but it's just hard if you can't shoot the ball. Like, it's really, really hard. Like, to me, like, end of the first round right now.
And my follow-up is, how would you compare him right now to Scotty Lewis?
I'm probably a little bit more willing to bet on Scotty than I am Josh, if only because of the outlier length. And I think Scotty has a bit more outlier quick twitch.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, some of Scotty's recoveries that he has, just from an athletic standpoint, are just
outrageous.
Ridiculous. They're like 99th percentile shit for a wing. Like, I'm with that. I just grouped those two together because I'm not sure about the half court game on offense.
I think they're like definitely two prospects worth grouping together.
Yeah, so similar conceptual idea of half-court offense. I don't know what they do. I think that Josh is smarter than Scotty as far as making decisions, but both players are very unselfish as passers.
Yep.
Like, Josh has made some really good reads, but I don't know what it adds up to if they can't really shoot the ball. Like, both of them can really – they have that quick twitch. Like, Josh Green can really move his feet. He can get into stance, and he can mirror you. But he's not huge. Like, he's like six. He plays more like a 6'5" guy than like a 6'8" guy. You know what I mean? Of course, I know his actual height. But I'm just saying, for like a wing stopper, you want that added size. If he had that, if he was a legit 6'8", he would be much more interesting to me, because you'd be like, okay, like, he can really like change directions. I think he's light in his feet. I love his stance. He's like one of the few wings in this class that really gets in his stance at times.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned the same exact thing about Scotty Lewis on the last podcast when we talked about Scotty. Like, if he was 6'7", 6'8", he'd be a lot more interesting.
Exactly. And I think that's kind of the downfall to some of this, is like, I would bet on these guys more if they had those established frames. Like, Scotty's pretty slender. If he was built like a Coro, and that's why I like a Coro so much too, is like, he has that added size development, even though he's 6'6", but he plays bigger than that. And I think both of these guys are more like two guards without the skill of two guard. And that, I think when you look at it from an NBA standpoint, those guys, I don't know how well they fare in the league now, because the NBA relies so much on, you know, perimeter creation from your guard spots. If you can't bring that in the half court, like, you just have to be at a very specific team setting.
Well, you know, let's move on. Let's talk about Grant Riller, because I brought him up in the context of being at the Wooden Legacy event and not getting a chance to see him, unfortunately. I'm bummed about that, like, to be honest. Like, it doesn't look like he's going to get a chance to play Arizona. He might get a chance to play Providence, which could be interesting. I believe they play Wake Forest to start, and he'll be the best player on the court against Wake Forest. I don't really have a question there. Grant is a stud. He is just such a quick twitch, explosive finisher around the basket. Like, if you look at his finishing numbers last year, they are outlier level good for a guard. Very few guards have the finishing package of skills that Grant Riller does. And it's because he is so sudden in the way that he just like kind of attacks the basket that it's hard, I think, for opposing players to keep up with him. Like, it's just hard for, like, he can go directly into the body and draw fouls. He can go directly away from you and like create space. Like, it's very impressive. He made 74.2% of his half-court shots around the basket last season. For any player, not just guards, for any player 7 foot tall or 5 foot eight tall, that was in the 98th percentile last year. And like I said, he draws fouls. Like, he is just a ridiculously, ridiculously good player. Like, I love it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I think we mentioned that on the preseason pod with him. I guess finishing acumen is elite historically. Like, if you contextualize it, if you look at how often he gets to the rim, and of course it's lower level competition, but his efficiency as well, we just don't see prospects like this. And this is why I always thought that he should be drafted. I think he's more of like a late first guy to me right now, like early second. You know, he's going to be probably available in the second. That's kind of what matters more than like a big board. I think he's a value play in this class because of the guard depth. Some of these guys are going to fall. And he, to me, is a really nice pick in that range, honestly, because typically if this class was shorter in guards, you might see him get moved up a little bit. But right now, there's just too many of them. And I really do feel like he translates really well in the NBA space. He's a guy that wins. He can beat you with his handle. He can get to the basket. He has some strength. He has the ability to adjust in midair, adjustment craft at the basket. That's going to be big for him. If he can get that pull up to be any kind of consistent, if he can play off the ball, he's got a kind of a flat shot. That's something that I've noticed with him is like he shoots kind of a tightrope. And I'm not sure if I buy the arc, but I think his shooting indicators are good enough to at least bet on in that range. And he's kind of what the modern NBA is right now, as far as maybe not in the playoffs, because you kind of go through that size and the impact of that on your defense and like the trade-offs there. But in the regular season, he's a guy who can win space matchups, and not a lot of guards can do that consistently. And he's one of my better bets to do that in the class.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that. Ultimately, it is going to come down to the shot. But the one thing I do want to mention, he's been a lot better as a distributor this year. You know, the last few years, he has been more of a, you know, just straight scorer. Like, for instance, when Joe Chile was there 2 years ago, like, Joe mostly played the lead. You know, they would initiate a little bit with, like, Jarrell Brantley there last year in, like, the high post. But this is, like, Grant's show now, and he's averaging 5 assists a game. You know, he's turned it over a little bit more, unfortunately. But, like, he is a really, really interesting potential lead guard.
Yeah, and I have not seen the Central Florida game, I believe, yet, so that's on the docket. I'm probably going to get to that tonight, hopefully, and I heard he was really impressive, at least to start that game. So I'm pretty excited to watch him. I'm pretty excited about him overall. He's one of the guys that I look at in this class and say, I like the value of where it looks like he's going to be drafted at.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. All right, where do you want to go? I'll just offer you the board.
Trying to think. We covered most of the guys I was interested in. We got to talk about Aaron Nesmith, I think. That's a guy that we both of us brought up pre-podcast. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, he's shooting the ever-loving shit out of the ball. I think that, you know, getting Jerry Stackhouse there is like a very interesting, honestly, probably better situation for him to show what he's capable of as a prospect. Like, they're running more pro style sets. Like, they look more like a competent team than they did at any point last year. Part of the problem with Aaron Nesmith continues to be that, like, I have yet to see much passing acumen there. Like, I have not really even seen much in terms of him, like, making ball reversals or anything resembling kickout passes, right? But if you're shooting 9.2 three-point attempts per game and making them at a 53% clip, and you're 6'6" with like a damn near 7-foot wingspan, and you're 220 pounds, you are an NBA player, basically. We have to see where the shooting settles. Like, is he a 40% three-point shooter? Is he a 38% three-point shooter? Is he a 42% three-point shooter? I think the shot looks pretty good, but we need to see. And like, I'm overall a fan of what I have seen from Nesmith so far this year, to the point where, while they have played absolutely no one, he is still a guy that, like, I feel pretty comfortable, putting into like the bottom of my first round right now.
Yeah. And I think the NBA is going to be high on him just with his frame, his length, and his ability to shoot the ball. So that's really important, obviously, is how the NBA views him, that perception. And I wrote a piece about him last year that I never published. I think I got like 20 minutes into it, and I was like, I got kind of cold feet about it. And I was like, can he do enough else outside of the shooting? Because he can even shoot off some movement, too. Look at his synergy profile right now. It's absolutely ridiculous as far as the shooting efficiency, by the way. But can he do enough else on the floor to, outside of his size, build, and shooting prowess? And I'm not sold on that yet. I'm not sold on the defense being any kind of impactful, but he does have the tools. He seems to compete reasonably hard. That Vanderbilt team last year was very poor. So I want to see him against better competition. I'm very excited to watch more of him in SEC play. He's going to be one of the targets that I watch probably the most over the next like month or so, hopefully. So I get the intrigue. And right now in this class, again, I think you can make a very convincing case for him late round one.
Another guy that is in the SEC that you are certainly going to watch is Kyra Lewis at Alabama. He has been pretty good to start the year. Now, Alabama's, you know, his shooting and scoring numbers are just going to be inflated this year because Alabama runs more than I think all but one team in college basketball. So the fact that like Kyra Lewis is averaging, I want to say it's like 18 points. It's 21.5 points, 6.5 rebounds, and 5 assists. Like, that stuff is good. and they're great signs, but like the numbers are slightly inflated from like a more average scheme.
Yeah, and he's the engine of that offense. Like, I watched the game against Penn, and like he's gonna do numbers this year, just based on like you know the pace they play and his role in it. Like, this isn't a situation where it's like a multiple ball handler thing. From what I've seen, like, he's getting to the rim. It's him. He's the focal point, and everything kind of branches off that. So yeah, I mean, his speed and transition. We talked about him in the preseason pod as far as he wasn't really ready last year. He was one of the youngest players. Wasn't old enough to get drafted. He wasn't even draft eligible. So this year, I think he's putting it more together. I've only seen one of their games. I'm obviously going to watch North Carolina when we wrap this up, and hopefully he performs well in that setting. But there's a lot to like there, especially in transition. Really pushes the pace. He knows how to get to the rim. The pull-up hasn't really been there, but he has good shooting inputs. Like, he's pretty good off the catch, I think. I trust his catch and shoot, so he can play off the ball a little bit. There's a lot to like. He's kind of like Grant Riller. They're not similar players, really, but insofar as, like, I like where he's projected to go in this class. I think he's another one of the guards that I think is actually pretty damn good that can be available, like, late round one, early round two, that's a get.
Is he the player most helped by a change of scheme in this entire class? Like, I would imagine that he is, just in terms of, like, getting to the right system to accentuate his gifts. Because he is like this super quick, super fast guy who's now playing maybe the fastest transition-based game that we see of any major prospect right now in the country. Like, it's him, it's Cole Anthony, like, it's there's just a lot of these guys that, you know, have found really good fits for their game. You know, we can talk about Anthony Edwards in that regard, given how good Tom Crean is at developing these big, strong, you know, guards.
Yeah, I think Lewis definitely sticks out amongst that group as far as, you know, Nate Oates being there, pushing the tempo. And what I've seen, really just favoring him on the ball and featuring him. And that's something that, you know, numbers matter a lot. And he's going to put up numbers. I'm not trying to diminish his abilities. Like, I think he has real NBA skills as far as, you know, ability to get to the basket. And, you know, he has enough of a feel for the game to where I think he can make some decisions. He's not like a high level decision maker, in my opinion, but especially the way the NBA game is played now. And if he's going to be, I guess, conservatively a backup point guard, his ability to push the tempo and really get up and down has real value.
I'll give you the floor. Where do you want to go? Anyone else?
Let's go. You haven't watched too much of Paul Reed since last podcast. I just want to note just quickly, his numbers have been ridiculous. I watched some of the games, and I think the tape hasn't been quite as impressive to me. I mean, still very good. I mean, I think he's a very, very good college player at the very least, and he's a very real, like, late first round prospect. But yeah, he's just someone to track. If you haven't seen DePaul, they're actually pretty fun to watch. So I would recommend that.
DePaul's been awesome to watch this year. Like, what a weird statement to make, but very strange. DePaul has been super, super enjoyable. I have thoroughly and completely enjoyed everything I've seen from them this year. Paul Reed, but also like Romeo Weems has been really good. You know, Charlie Moore has been better than what I've ever seen him play, at the very least. Like, I have not been a Charlie Moore guy going back for a while, but he's been pretty good to start this year. So no, I am in on watching a lot more DePaul. And I think that Paul Reed is at the point now where, you know, certainly a top 40 guy for me. He's probably right at the end of the first round.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And staying in the Big East, just really quick, what are your thoughts on any of the Villanova guys? We see some differentiating opinions with Robinson Earl.
Not great.
I will say I'm kind of intrigued. Like, Brian Antoine made that, I think he played one game since he's been back. He actually made a couple flash plays, and you just kind of remembered how athletic he is. And he was actually okay as far as control in the half court. He's just someone that I'm sure a lot of people, some people at least, have forgotten about just because he didn't play to open the season. And he's actually very interesting to me as a prospect long term. I don't know if he has enough momentum, of course, to be a one and done. I don't know if he's skilled enough, but he's just someone you really should watch if he's going to play any kind of rotation minutes.
Let me rephrase. Like, I actually am a big fan of Brian Antoine, but I just really did not count him in this because he's played two games. He's coming off of injury in a scheme where it really does take a lot of time typically to like get adjusted and figure some things out. And honestly, like, I probably like made that like jokey statement too soon because like Sadiq Bey has been pretty good.
Yes.
Like, he's shooting 48% from three. Again, not sustainable, but, you know, when you're doing that and putting up like a 3-to-1 assist to turnover and averaging 14 points a game while not doing too much on the floor, like, that's a pretty translatable skill. The problem that Villanova has is that I know Colin Gillespie is putting up reasonable numbers. I just don't trust that dude to really do anything against good teams.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. I'm very skeptical of him overall. I think most guys really fixated around Robinson Earl as like the main guy right now. Maybe Bay number two. Like, Cole Swider can shoot, and, you know, the offensive gifts are there. He's just not good on defense. So I don't know if you can really consider him, at least yet. Maybe he's more of like a multi-year guy if you get there.
Yeah, like, it's funny. Like, I actually like all of these guys to some extent. Like, I think Robinson Earl plays in the NBA and probably plays for a while in the NBA. Sadiq Bey, like, I totally buy him as a floor spacer. Brian Antoine, I'm a big fan of. Cole Swider, even for like a college basketball player, I really like Cole Swider as a college basketball player. Justin Moore, like, I think Justin Moore within 2 years is probably going to be an NBA player. It's just, there's no glue holding it all together right now because I don't buy into Gillespie being the guy right now. Brian Antoine could come in and become the shot creator that, you know, puts everyone slightly down a spot in the hierarchy and makes everything fit together. And Villanova could very easily go on a run, but they don't have that yet. And I think that that's what's kind of holding them back right now.
Yeah, and as prospects, I just got asked this question recently about Villanova, and I think I like a lot of these guys. Like, I think a lot of these guys will play in the NBA. I don't know if there's a real get outside of maybe Antoine if he can show enough in the skill game in the half court. Like, I like Robinson Earl. I wouldn't be opposed if he went like late first, early second. Like, I think he can do some things. Like, I do trust his jump shot aesthetically. I think he's gonna be able to shoot it. Short roll, he can pass. Defensively, I don't know what his real impact is. I don't think he's like a pure switch guy. The lack of length hurts him. Like, some have made, I think Mike Gribanoff made the Chuma Okeke comparison. I get why he's saying that, but Chuma has that added wingspan. Like, Chuma's really, really long, and Earl just doesn't have that. You know, he can get exploded over the top. He relies a lot on power offensively still, as well as like overwhelming smaller guys in the post, and that's just not going to be available to him at the next level. So he's going to be more of a stretch big. If you buy the shot, I can see buying in on him. There's some mock drafts that I've seen that have had him even in the lottery. I don't think that's completely insane. I'm just not that high on him doing anything at a very positive level. You really just have to buy the shot as being like sub-elite to really get there.
Yeah, I guess the Robinson Earl's like got an even wingspan, doesn't he?
It might be a little longer than that. I don't know exactly what it is, but I know it's not like Chuma level. Like, it doesn't pop to you on the screen. It's definitely small, and I really do think that matters with his, like, he's got some bounce, but it's not like he's a crazy athlete as far as anything goes. He can move okay, but not great. And when you start to factor all of those into the equation, you just need a longer wingspan with someone like that usually.
Well, you know, with Okeke, like, they're just very different. Like, I actually don't think that they're all that comparable. I think of Robinson a lot more of a big, whereas I think of Okeke as like a guy that's going to defend threes and fours. Like, Robinson Earl, I think that he has like kind of a short neck, because if you look at his standing reach, like, it's actually not bad. Like, his standing reach, I think, is like right around 8'11 or so. Whereas Okeke is something more in the range of like 8'8, 8'9. Okeke is longer and a lot more reactive. Robinson Earl is a lot stronger and a much better rebounder, right? Like, to me, they're just very different prospects, I think. And like, that reactivity that Okeke has is part of why he is so much better as a perimeter defender. Like, he just has like a level of twitch that I think Robinson Earl doesn't have. And that's not to say that Robinson Earl isn't a good prospect. I just think they're different.
Yeah, that's fair. I just think from a projection standpoint, like, they're kind of similar in what you want them to do. Like, more floor spaces on offense. They can, you know, make decisions. They're both cerebral players. I think that's the key takeaway as far as like more like stretch, some elements of playmaking at the four, and then defensively more team defenders. Like, Chuma can't really move his feet that well either. Like, he's not a great switch guy. You like him more as like a help side guy. Like, that's where he does his best work as far as the reactivity there. And I think Robinson Earl is kind of similar to that. As far as, he can't impact plays. He doesn't have like Chuma's elite instincts, in my opinion. He definitely doesn't have the length, which hurts him. But just getting at the overall like kind of intelligence package that comes along with a, more of a four type. I can get the allure with Robinson Earl again. I just think some are definitely higher on him than me as far as impact.
Can we talk about Miles Powell?
Please.
What a fun player. Like 23 points per game so far this year. Still not a passer, like not even really trying to make a whole lot of plays for his teammates. Like, it's not his job to do that. He is a gunner, and he is going to knock down shots. He is one of the best shooters in the country. Look, he's like 6'2", and like stout, and he's lost a lot of weight. So like maybe, you know, teams might have some small concerns about him putting on weight later on. But like, he has been just an absolute monster this season, because he's played like four games realistically. Like, they played Stony Brook and he played 4 minutes against Stony Brook, in part because he got that ankle injury. But if you look at the four games they've played so far, 27 points, 37 against Michigan State, and just that like ridiculous performance. By the way, Michigan State is getting wrecked by guards right now, and that is a significant problem that they have to figure out. Between Anthony Edwards going for 37, Tyrese Maxey going for 26, and Miles Powell going for 37. They beat St. Louis, who is a really good team defensively, by like 17, and he had 26 in that game with 4 of 11 from 3. He had 23 against Florida A&M. Like, he's just been ridiculously good and ridiculously consistent as a scorer. Like, we're at the point now where he's averaging, I want to say that the number is like 26 points a game.
Yeah, that's not really surprising, honestly. Coming into this season, like, he was one of the best scorers in college basketball, and he really has a diverse shot. He can come off his screen and knock down an NBA three, like, consistently. And that's something not a lot of guards can do. He's got a powerful build. He's not like he's got a slight build. I mean, he's pretty well built. I don't know. His defense has always been lackluster to me, and some of that is probably role, as far as he has to do everything for them offensively. Like, that Michigan State game was absolutely ridiculous. But I do think that they're not the same player, but to me, he's something like a Bryn Forbes type potentially in the NBA, where it's like he's out there for his floor space and he can do a little bit more on the ball, even though you don't really want him to. He's probably going to be a defensive negative, but it's really just the shot making and the ability to come off screens, the ability to shoot off the dribble. Maybe he can, you know, initiate some offense and transition where he can take that early, you know, deep like drag screen pull up three or something. But I do feel like NBA teams are going to buy him more as this process goes along. Like, him and Jordan Nora, they're obviously very different players and different roles and schemes, but I think you can trust both of those guys to shoot the ball. So at a certain point in the draft, you're just like, who can make a shot? And Miles Powell's going to be at the top of that list.
Yeah, I love the Bryn Forbes comparison. He's going to be like a guy that needs to find the right spot like Bryn did, but if he does, like, he's really good. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I agree.
And regardless, like, I'm going to enjoy watching like the shit out of Seton Hall this year because Miles Powell is on that team.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. He's very entertaining to watch. Like, that Michigan State game, that role that he went on, I think it was in the second half, was just that was one of the most entertaining parts of the season to me thus far.
So four guys flying like slightly under the radar, and this is who we'll end on here. Jahmius Ramsey for Texas Tech. He is averaging a bunch of points. He is scoring a lot, which is great. They have not played a soul yet this year. Actually, in the best team that they've played was Tennessee State, and it was Ramsey's worst game of the year. Like, who knows what he is right now? Like, I just genuinely do not know what to expect from him yet. Because, like, even in high school, like, I was not, like, a wild fan, as we talked about earlier in the preseason.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think I've seen two of their games early in the season, and the competition level was very poor. But Ramsey has shot the ball well off the catch from three. He looks very, I wouldn't say necessarily like fully bankable there, but I do buy his shot off the catch. We'll see how high the ceiling, of course, as far as degree. Pull or Fall on Twitter had a really good thread about him, as well as Kyra Lewis as well, so you can check that out. But I'm buying the Polar Fall. He's probably the best single follow on Twitter. He's brilliant. Like, he does body mechanics breakdowns, like skill breakdowns. I'll shoot you his thread after we conclude this podcast, but he's a must follow in my opinion.
Okay, I'm gonna have to find this person. I demand I demand more, more information on this. So yeah, it's not that like I don't want to mention him. He's been really good so far this year and is worthy of that mention. But I just don't know what to do with him yet as a prospect. Like, he's a guy that scouts are very intrigued by for sure. You know, 6'4", powerful build at 200 pounds already. Like, a guy that has a real chance. But the other thing is, too, like, Texas Tech just fucking overwhelms these teams. Like, they really do with their athletes and with Chris Beard. Like, you put that much athleticism and that high of a level of coaching on the court against these weak, weak competition, it's just always going to be a blowout.
Yeah. I mean, the execution, just how you're... Graham is unreal, frankly. Like, seeing athletically Ramsey and like Shannon in preseason and like going through that strength and conditioning program, ridiculous. But I think overall I'm more in wait and see, like you are. Like, Ramsey's IQ didn't really pop to me in the games that I've watched thus far. I don't know how much he's really going to get to the rim and like create offense for himself, but I'm at least cautiously buying his catch and shoot ability. I mentioned Shannon, that's another guy to watch. TJ Holyfield's been pretty good for them, and of course they had transfer Chris Clark, who is very, very old. I do enjoy watching him in college. Like, I think he's a good college player, but Texas Tech is more of like a wait and see once they start playing better competition. If we're really going to buy into Ramsey as like a late first, even like mid first, if he keeps shooting the ball at such a high rate, but his free throw percentage hasn't been as high either. So I don't know. It's wait and see. I think you summed it up best.
Franz Wagner played for Michigan today. He's a guy that I was pretty intrigued by. Like, I probably would have had him in my top 75 or so to start the year. He had an injury, so he missed Michigan's first little set of games here, but I'm intrigued to see where he goes. He had 6 points. He made a couple of threes. I think that their first play was like get him a corner 3-point look. And he just absolutely knocked it down. So ridiculous shooter. The question is, like, is he athletic enough to consistently deal with the wing defensively?
Yeah, and I haven't seen him in probably 5 months. I watched some of his European tape, and I was impressed with the shot. That's what I remember most vividly. So I'm going to be looking forward to watching him. I haven't watched a ton of Michigan this year, but we'll watch them today. So I'll have updated thoughts probably on the next podcast for that.
So we talk about Isaiah Joe a lot on this podcast, but Mason Jones is his teammate at Arkansas. 6'6", but a little bit more of like a power athlete, whereas Isaiah Joe is just a super skilled shooter. He has been awesome to start the year. Like, he's initiating a lot of their actions. He is honestly, like, probably a more impactful college player right now than Joe is.
Yeah.
Like, just because he has that, like, physical strength and skill. Do we think Mason Jones is a real prospect at all?
I do. I really do. I don't know to what degree yet, but from what I've seen, I really like, as far as he can really shoot the ball. Like, he can shoot from deep range off the dribble. He can shoot off the catch. Like, his free throw shooting has been unreal this year. I think he's got good touch, good craft around the basket. Like, he's not a great leaper, and he's not this dynamic athlete, but he's a little craftier than he gets credit for on offense, and he competes from what I've seen defensively. Like, Arkansas, they haven't played a lot of great teams this year, clearly, but I feel like they've been pretty good defensively, and that's something that a lot of people might not have expected with, like, Gafford gone, for example, and, like, that rim protection, but I feel like their perimeter defense has really held up, and I think Mason Jones, if you look at, like, some of the impact metrics, like BPM, for example, like, I feel like he's usually on those lists, and there's probably a reason for that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's like a very real prospect, like maybe a top 100 guy for me already, even though Arkansas has not played anybody. And like, he was kind of off the radar to start the year. Like, that's actually a pretty big jump.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
And then the last guy is Tyrell Terry at Stanford. Stanford has been one of the most improved teams in the country, I think. And it is in large part because of Terry. He is their point guard. He's very small. He's like 6'1", 170 pounds, but he's an elite shooter and a terrific ball mover. And having both of those skills is exactly what Stanford needed last year. Like, they just needed someone to come in and kind of put everyone into slightly better roles than what they were in previously.
Yeah, I love the kid. I love watching him play. I think he's going to be, at the very least in time, one hell of a college player. Like, he's just really smart, really skilled. His deceleration to get into his pull-up is really nice. Like, his jump shot mechanics are gorgeous. Like, he can shoot from NBA 3, he can get it off quickly. He knows how to move without the ball pretty well. Like, I haven't been, like, overwhelmed with him there, but I think he has shows a good feel. He's just tiny, man. Like, you see him getting golfed at times trying to drive, like against Butler last night, I believe it was, like the game-winning play, like he just got completely swallowed up on a drive, and he probably should have kicked it out, so it wasn't a great decision. But I think what you noted about his decision-making, he really knows how to play. He knows how to pick his spots, and that's something that, you know, is a revelation with a lot of this freshman guard class, who just seems to kind of like do things on their own agenda, take pull-ups when they shouldn't at times, and they don't know exactly how to attack and when to attack. And that's something that Terry just has in spades. It was unfortunately, I mean, if he was 6'4", 6'5", like we'd be having a very, very real conversation right now. He's just very small.
Well, yeah, like Terry played on the same AAU team as Matthew Hurt and Zeke Nagy. So like a lot of the time he was just not the guy, right? So he really actually just figured out how to play and how to distribute and how to make quick decisions while also being someone that was like very genuinely a floor spacer, right? Like he just needed to be able to shoot to kind of clear out yep. space for those guys to operate inside, right? So it's a skill set that really has developed very nicely exactly for what Stanford needs. Like, honestly, like his role on this Stanford team is bigger than the role that I saw him play when he was playing AAU, because they ask him to like actually create stuff. And like, that was just not as much what he was doing in AAU. Like, he certainly did it. He was their point guard and like he would initiate, but it was different, right? Like, he is higher up the hierarchy on this Stanford team, and the Stanford team's really good. They're one of, like I said, the most improved teams in college basketball, I think. And it is in large part due to Tyrell Terry coming in and being able to make everything just kind of fit better.
Yeah, I totally agree. And shout out to Francis on Twitter, who actually sent me a DM earlier this year before the season started, saying, "You got to watch this kid." And I've been pretty impressed. Like, I think we should watch him very carefully to see if he still grows, if he, how much strength he can add. He's almost surely not a one and done. We can say that. He's not going to have the momentum. But when teams see him shoot in person, like, it's going to be a conversation that they have, because this guy, like, I really like Trey Mann coming into the season. He's shooting like I thought Trey Mann would shoot. Not saying like anything else in their games. Like, I know that Tyrell was a smarter player, but he can shoot the shit out of the basketball.
Totally agree. Cole, is there one more person you want to mention before we get out of here?
Actually, for once, there's not. I think we covered everybody.
We did it. What a shocker. This is amazing. We've accomplished our goals here. Cole, tell the people where they can find your work.
Yeah, as usual at thestepin.com. Don't have anything new right now, but we should have some new content coming up. I'm sure Mike and Ross, for example, will have kind of post-tournament big boards up at some point. So check that out and continue to listen to this podcast.
Go read The Stepien. Go rate, review, and subscribe to The Athletic. Go rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast as much as anything. Like I mentioned on the last podcast, we are going to do something of a mailbag where if you leave us questions with 5-star reviews attached, we will answer those questions on a podcast at some point in the future. So I'm just going to keep plugging that. Please leave us some questions, anything you have on this NBA draft, anything you have on movies. Cause you know, like I said, like I missed the Duke game to go watch Charlie's Angels last night, which was, by the way, pretty fun. It was pretty fun. So please, go on ahead and do that. And until next time, we will talk soon. Bye.